Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Our question in this episode arises, is the 16th overall pick in the NFL draft the greatest in history? It just might be, because this is where the GOAT started his journey. In 1985, the 49ers traded up to 16 to snag a receiver from Mississippi Valley State. The rest was history, with three Super Bowl victories and every record in the book for a receiver. But it's not just Jerry. Pick 16 gives us the fly-in Hawaiian Troy Polamalu and a brick wall known as Zach Martin. From the Canton Locks to the greatest of all time, let's look at the power of 16. This is Pigskin Dispatch, and we are joined by our guest, Ed Cleese, who's on our journey of all 32 top picks in the NFL's history and all the legends that came with them. Pick 16 is here now. Hello, my football friends. We are in the middle of the draft. We're in the middle of waiting for the draft. We are 16 days out for the draft in Pittsburgh. And join me today, as we have been for the last 16 days, is Ed Cleese, as we're counting down the draft days with looking at the history of the draft. Ed, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, we're at the exact midway point. How are you tonight?
We are at the midpoint. You are absolutely right. And it's, you know, halfway through that journey. It's been fun so far, and it's only going to get better from here. We're climbing that mountain and getting some really outstanding players we get to talk about as we go on here.
Some big names coming up, especially tonight.
Yeah, definitely. You know, 16th position in the draft. You know, it's middle of the pack. The contenders we've already talked about all the contending teams from the previous season, how they drafted. Now we're getting into the bottom feeders of the league from the previous year, but the higher draft picks and the more marquee players in some cases. And we got a lot to talk about. So why don't you give us your overview of pick number 16's history?
16th pick is a lot of haves and have-nots. There is not as much middle ground as we've seen in some of these other picks. I didn't have a whole lot of guys that I was indifferent on. There were a lot of no-names and busts, and then some major heavy hitters at the top. So that's kind of we'll start. I like to always start with, like, recent, and I'd say the last 10 years have not been pretty. I'd say we're tapping out at decent to slightly above average in recent years. So 60, a little surprising. We're only halfway through the first round, and teams aren't hitting very often recently. Like, for example, my team, the Commanders, in 2022, they took Jahan Dotson. In 2023, they had the 16th pick 2 years in a row. They took Emmanuel Forbes. Neither of them lasted more than two seasons on the team. And now they're both kind of struggling and being replaced at their next team, the Eagles and Rams, respectively. Now, Forbes bounced back a little bit and did have some moments for the Rams last year, but they spent a lot of money on corners this offseason. So there's just been a lot of that. And only two quarterbacks have been taken at this slot since 1980, and they are both massive busts. One would be E.J. Manuel, taken in 2013 by the Bills, career record of 6-12. So only started 18 games, only one third of them, and was out of the league. And then one that really stands out would be Dan McGuire. He went 2-3 in his career for the Seahawks, drafted in, I think, 1992, 91 or 92, I'm sorry. And 2-3 in his career, five career starts. That's really bad for the 16th pick in the draft. He is the tallest quarterback in the history of the NFL at 6'8", the brother of Mark McGuire, of course. And during my research, I found something really interesting. Chuck Knox was the coach of the Seahawks in the early 90s, and he did not want McGuire. So this, I know this would have been the 91 draft because this answers my question. Do you have any idea who he may have wanted in 1991? The hint is the guy went in the second round.
1991. Boy, I'm drawing a blank. Who would even be?
Chuck Knox desperately wanted to take a kid out of Southern Miss named Brett Favre.
Oh,
he was
okay.
Overruled by ownership in Seattle, who insisted on McGuire. So that it's funny how the balance of history can shift, you know, just like on a decision like that, you know, how the trajectory of two franchises would have been so dramatically different had the owners just listened to the old coach on who to take at quarterback.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the, well, they didn't get him in the draft, but the future coach, Mike Holmgren of the Seattle Seahawks, was in Green Bay, and eventually they would end up getting their hands on him from the Falcons.
So, right, exactly. Yeah. And then, but the busts were not exclusive to quarterbacks, Darren. We had lots of busts or near busts. I'm not going to name them all. I'm going to be really nice to leave some of the guys off of this list. We had Justin Harrell, who only started 14 games in his career for the Packers on defensive lineman. Hartley Dykes in 1989 by the Patriots, a receiver out of Oklahoma State. He was awesome in college, and he was a little unfortunate. His career was over after 2 years, pretty much due strictly to injuries. Had some real devastating knee. It's funny, we've seen a lot of that from the guys that were drafted like in the 80s and 90s, like an early knee injury, and they're done. They're done. So we've come a long way in injury rehab and guys coming back, because early on, there's so many guys we've talked about, Darren, that blew out a knee their rookie year, second year, and they're done. They're gone.
But, well, and even think about the field surfaces they were playing on. There's still carpet they were playing on, and not
an
old
Foxborough there for Dykes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep, no doubt. That's a good point. And then one thing that really stuck out to me is in 1987 and 1988, the Dolphins had the 16th pick both years. In 1987, they took John Bosa, the father of Joey and Nick. John was not nearly as good as his sons. He flamed out really quick. He played 3 years in the NFL, only had 7 sacks. And then the next year, the Dolphins outdid themselves by drafting linebacker Eric Kummerow. And get this, Darren, 0 career starts, taken in 16th pick in the draft, and you never start a game in the NFL. Not one. That he played some games, but never got a start and was out of the league. And then I also wrote down Pete Koch, who was drafted by the Bengals in 1984. He played only 1 year in Cincinnati before they shipped him off to the Chiefs, and then he quickly retired and became an actor.
Well, he at least he made a good career move out of it.
Sure, I think he's been in a lot of like B movies and maybe some commercials and stuff. So that's how badly he didn't want to play for the Bengals, I guess. Now, it wasn't all bad. I've got some honorable mentions on the good side. Dominic Rogers Cromartie was drafted at number 16 overall, had a really solid career. And then I had two old-school offensive linemen that I really remember. Jim Richter was taken in 1980 by the Bills. He was a center, and he wound up being the center for all four of the Super Bowl teams. Now, hear that again. He was drafted in 1980 and played on the 90, 91, 92, and 93 Super Bowl teams. So he obviously had a very long career. That's a great career. And Lewis Sharp was drafted by the Cardinals in 1982, an offensive lineman. And he played for the St. Louis Cardinals, where he was drafted. They became the Phoenix Cardinals, and he was still there when they transitioned to the Arizona Cardinals. So he played for well into the double-digit years, all with the Cardinals. Really nice career.
The only city he missed was when they were the Chicago Cardinals.
Exactly. He only didn't play in Chicago. He wasn't that old. And then my two toughest cuts, and we can probably debate these on where I had my – 4 and 5 guys were Chester McLaughlin, taken in 1992, and Hugh Douglas, taken in 1995. Both defensive linemen that had really nice careers.
Wow, I'm surprised that one of those didn't make your top five. So
yeah, it was a tough interesting. Cut. It was a tough cut.
Yeah, I'll bet. All right, well, let's get to your top five.
So top five. So the heart wants what the heart wants. And number five, this is the guy that bumped McLaughlin and Hugh Douglas. And, you know, I try not to be biased, and I try to set that aside, but sometimes we are what we are, Darren. And I have all my whole life of watching football, I will die on this hill for this player. And that is number five, I will die on the Santana Moss Hill. He was taken 16th overall by the Jets in 2001. He didn't have a lot of accolades in his career in terms of like Pro Bowls, All Pros like that. He did have four 1,000-yard seasons, which is good. 66 career touchdowns, which is good. Neither of those completely jump off the page compared to some of these other receivers we're talking about. But I've got him on here for two reasons, Darren. Number one is he was very productive. He played on some decent teams with actually both the Jets and the Redskins, but never in explosive offenses or with elite or even decent quarterbacks, really. Kind of maxed out at okay quarterback play during his career, but never on like explosive offenses where they could really exploit him. And then number two, Darren, he was a massive big game player, a guy that you could really count on. In 2002, they made the playoffs. The Jets did, believe it or not. They actually beat the Colts. He scored a touchdown in that game. He had a 100-yard receiving game in the playoffs and scored a go-ahead touchdown in the game they won against San Diego. And then you might remember the next week in 2004, they went to Pittsburgh. And a game that eventually the Steelers won in overtime, Moss tied it with a 75-yard punt return for a touchdown in Pittsburgh. In the Redskins' playoff loss in Seattle, he had 100 yards receiving and a touchdown. He was the famous one behind the Monday Night Miracle comeback by the Redskins. Two touchdowns in 3 minutes, both over 60 yards. He had a 65-yard touchdown against the Jaguars in overtime. He was a big-time playmaker. He was sort of in a sea of lost years for the Redskins during the Dan Snyder era. I would actually maybe argue that he was the number one most popular player of that entire Dan Snyder era, maybe besides Sean Taylor. Santana is beloved in Washington. He's in the Ring of Fame, and he's in my top five.
Yeah, I mean, great player. I mean, a dude was a burner, stretched the field, made some big catches like you alluded to, and yeah, he was a gamer. I think he was a good player for the Jets and the Redskins, you know, so
yeah, for sure.
Followed all the way through his career. So yeah, definitely a good pick.
Absolutely.
All right, so who do you have at four?
Number four, you probably remember this guy, drafted in 1999 by the Tennessee Titans at the time, Javon Kearse, the Freak. Mm-hmm. Do you remember? One of the great nicknames, the Freak. And, you know, what's funny about him is his first 3 years, he started all 16 games. And in his first 3 years, he was off to about as good of a start as any defensive end ever. He was the Defensive Rookie of the Year and first team All-Pro as a rookie. That's off the charts good. That's very rare, very rare. In the Music City Miracle playoff win against Buffalo, he had two sacks, a safety, two forced fumbles. He had a sack in the Super Bowl that year against Kurt Warner. He was very good in the playoffs in 99 that rookie year. After that, he made a couple more Pro Bowls. He had 36 sacks in his first three seasons. So you do the math there. That's really, really good. He got injured, and then he was the comeback player of the year after that. And then after that, it was just kind of over. It just he was a decent player for a couple years. He had a couple of okay years for the Eagles, and then he ended back in Tennessee. So it just kind of ended abruptly and quickly. But, man, those first few years, he was, like, off the charts good.
Yeah, he was almost like a video game player. You know, I can think of two defenders over watching football that were just seemed to be on every play when they, especially when they were in their younger seasons in the NFL. You know, one was Junior Seau, who seemed like he was sideline to sideline. Another one was Javon Kearse. And Kearse was, you know, in almost every play. And from a defensive end where you're playing on one side of the ball and you're making tackles on the opposite side, you know, that's really amazing. And he was all over the place, like you said, especially early on in his career.
And I'm not sure a dude's ever looked any better in a football uniform than Kearse did. Goodness. Yeah. He looked
he was cut.
Impressive. Yeah impressive
he was
dude. Cut. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Remind me of myself in my younger days.
Me too. That's exactly what I think you were nicknamed the Freak, but maybe for other reasons.
Yeah. Then I woke up and
there you go. Yeah.
All right. So who do you have ranked at number three?
Number three is a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm very confident in saying that. And that is Zach Martin, drafted in 2014, an offensive guard from the Cowboys. I mean, we don't really need to talk much about this, Darren, because he was first team All-Pro 7 of his 11 seasons in the NFL. He's on the all-decade team of the 2010s. Unfortunately, he was very durable, and then he had a terrible ankle injury and just, like, couldn't come back from it. So his career was a little bit short, I guess, at those 11 years. If you're going to dock him for anything, maybe it would be that. But I think that he is just in the Hall of Fame. I really don't think there's going to be a debate about it. And, you know, a guy that was on our top five earlier in the list was Travis Frederick, the center. And those two overlapped for like 5 years there. And that is, you know, Dak's early years when Zeke Elliott was, you know, running roughshod over the league. Their offensive line was amazing. And it was because of those two dudes.
Yeah, they Cowboys usually have some pretty strong linemen on, and definitely Zach Martin is one of them. So great, great selection there.
Yes. Are you ready to stand up and cheer for this next one?
I think I might be cheering too early, but
get your head and shoulders out, because the number two player that's on my list is drafted in 2003 by your Steelers safety, Troy Polamalu. Easy as it gets. Would probably be number one on a lot of these picks if it wasn't for the one guy that's ahead of him. I didn't have a lot of numbers because I thought maybe you'd take care of that. But what I would say about him, just a gamer, you know, just a gamer and one of the most fun guys to watch. I was a youth football coach for my son, and I would sometimes, if I had to pick a player for some of the kids to watch, that just say, hey, just watch some highlights of this guy and play football like that. That is sort of like, and that's Troy Polamalu, the, you know, flying around, like literally his hair flying around, but jumping over the line. He's sacking quarterbacks. He's making plays on the back end. He's all over, playing with like a lot of joy. He was a really fun guy to watch. He had the game-sealing interception return for a touchdown against the Ravens in the 2008 playoffs. Of course, the Steelers won the Super Bowl that year. I'm sure you remember that play when the Ravens had a chance to win or tie, and he took it back to the house. Just an amazing player. One of the best safeties ever. I did, when we talked a few picks ago, about comparing him to Ed Reed. I put Reed just a tad ahead, but they're basically neck and neck as two of the best safeties of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you. Reed was probably the better value pick because he was a lower round pick, you know, than Polamalu. But I think Polamalu had maybe a better career, and maybe I'm biased, but that's okay. You know, you said earlier with Santana Moss. You know, Polamalu, you know, I appreciated so much how Polamalu played, but it came to light after he retired. A couple years ago, I got to talk to his defensive coordinator for many years, Dick LeBeau. And LeBeau would talk so much about Troy Polamalu. You know, you can tell there's a couple players that he just had that sparkle in his eye and really was very fond of. But Polamalu was his chess piece, and he could put him basically anywhere on the field. I mean, the dude would play in the box, but sometimes he's up on the line of scrimmage. You know,
oh, absolutely.
You think about that play against the Tennessee Titans where he leaped over the line. It was a first and goal, and I think it was Kerry Collins. He dropped, you know, before he even really took the ball from center. You know, he was on the ground. It was unbelievable. And you know, that interception that they picked off Flacco for took it back to the house. You know, anytime you can put a dagger in your rival, especially in a playoff game. That was Polamalu, but just some of the unbelievable tackles he would made. I mean, he was a very sure tackler. He was like a missile. He was the Tasmanian devil was one of his nicknames. And that's the way he played it for. And when you say a guy playing with his hair on fire, well, he had plenty of fire coming out of that helmet.
Yes. That's for sure. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. I love Polamalu. So yeah, good selection, but I agree with you. You can't take him number one, probably almost most other draft slots. You could probably be debatable for number one, but probably not this one because you have a very good number one you're going to talk about.
Yeah, right, I mean, and the hard thing about this is like, what I thought to myself, what am I going to say about this guy that isn't just reading off the numbers? And I think I got it. And that's number one is Jerry Rice, taken in 1985 by the 49ers, of course. His rookie year was fine. It didn't really stand out. And then after that, it was just like, give me a break with this guy. Unbelievable. He is, of course, the all-time leader in NFL history in catches, in yards, in touchdown receptions, in scrimmage yards. He's the all-time leader in NFL history in playoff reception yards and playoff reception touchdowns. He was great in the actual Super Bowls, including one MVP of a Super Bowl. At age 40, by the time he was in Oakland, he had 92 catches and over 1,100 yards for the Raiders, and that team went to the Super Bowl. The Raiders went to the Super Bowl of all teams, right? And then he had a pretty good year at 41, too. And then at 42, it was finally time for him to hang it up. And I don't, with Rice, it's like, what do you say? And ultimately, Darren, I land on this. I think that Jerry Rice is the greatest football player of all time, period. End of sentence. He's, if we're doing an all-time list, he's my number one. There's going to be a guy that down the road, I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about that I sometimes waffle with. But he's number one for me. I don't think you can play your position in football any better than Jerry Rice played his. And I'm not really sure how you even debate it.
Yeah, I agree with you because he's just so dominant, his position. I mean, I think Randy Moss is in second for most of the NFL records to Jerry Rice. And he's not even in the same ballpark with Rice's number. So it's like night and day. You know, you look at him like, holy shit, that was like two careers in between their numbers, you know. And Moss was a very good player, as we well know.
He was on our list earlier. But the other thing is just, you know, sometimes the eye test. Meaning, you know, my team played the 49ers a lot in the 80s. And if it's like third and six, you're like, they should just move the chains right now. You know, he is getting the first down. He's making the big play. He, of course, benefited from playing with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. But as we mentioned, even as a 40-year-old playing with a non-Hall of Fame quarterback later in his career, he was still insanely productive. He would have been awesome in any offense, any era, any time. He is the GOAT.
Well, he was even part in college. Willie Totten, I believe, where were they? Jackson State, I think.
Yes.
They set that NCAA record.
Or was it Mississippi? I always get Jackson State or Mississippi Valley.
Maybe it was Mississippi State.
Mississippi Valley State, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, but Willie Totten was his quarterback, and they set like an NCAA record for touchdowns. It was like some ungodly number. I forget if it was the yardage or the touchdown passes, but Jerry Rice caught the majority of those in that game, and in record books for college too. So he was outstanding his whole career playing football. Yeah. Probably a great Pop Warner player too, you know.
Sure he was.
Yeah. But okay, so it's interesting. You look and you say, how could Jerry Rice go 16 in a draft, you know, as dominant as he was? But really, you know, it's fairly legitimate what people took in that draft. You know, Buffalo took Bruce Smith, who's in the Hall of Fame number one that year in 85. Bill Frelick, you know, was taken by Atlanta. Chris Dolman's taken fourth by the Vikings. And you know, Al Toon is in that draft before him, and Jim Lachey. You know, so there's some good linemen and defensive players taken in there. Lomas Brown is another one that was taken in there. But you know, Jerry Rice just sticks out like a sore thumb in the middle of the pack of that draft. And it was a great draft. There's a lot of talented players, but man, if people only knew what they knew now, I bet you he'd probably be number one.
With all due respect to Chris Dolman and Bill Frelick and Al Toon and Lomas Brown, those teams made a mistake.
Yeah, but you think about it. You know, coming out of college, you have an HBCU player, you know, and you have, you know, Bruce Smith is, outstanding player in college. You know, these are all marquee college programs these guys are coming from with teams filling needs, you know. And definitely Bruce Smith filled the bill for Buffalo, you know. They would never got to four Super Bowls in a row if it's not for Bruce Smith. And, you know, but, that's the way sometimes those drafts shake out. And you have outstanding players in the middle of the pack left over for somebody like the 49ers to snatch up and get even better.
Yep. Yeah, what a career, man.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that is, that's definitely a top five pick right there. Some great selections in there. We ended up having Jerry Rice and Troy Polamalu, of course, in the Hall of Fame. But we had one other Hall of Famer that was taken, and that was Bobby Bell, who was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings in 1963. Excellent linebacker. Many people that remember that era say he was maybe one of the premier linebackers. He's right up there with Buckus and Nitschke and some of the others from the 60s era teams. Another player that was kind of an amazing player, and I got to talk to his daughter a few years ago, is Gene Washington. He ended up being in the NFL, a part of some of those great wide receiver cores that were out there.
So and working for the NFL for many years.
Right. Russ Francis is another one drafted in 1975 by the New England Patriots at the time. Some great players all the way around here back in the 90 years of draft history for that. You know, the most popular position, you know, if people are, whoever's drafting 16 this year, wondering, you know, what could my team be drafting? Well, wide receiver has been the most popular position in the first 90 years of the draft. And like we said, we had three Hall of Famers. And that sort of takes us to our draft stat of the day. And you're going to like this. You have your Oklahoma hat on. I have another Oklahoma draft stat for you. Now, the Sooners developed consecutive starting quarterbacks who went to be selected in the NFL draft in Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler, Caleb Williams. And even more astounding, three of those five, Mayfield, Murray, and Williams, were selected number one overall. So good job by the Sooners in finding their signal callers and shipping them off to the NFL.
That's a heck of a run there in the 2010s, man.
Yeah, and you know, you really, when I think of Oklahoma, I don't even really think about them as being, you know, quarterback university, but maybe that, you know, I think Miami always gets the credit for that, for the Kellys and Testaverdes and Cozars of the world. But this is, I mean, that's some really big names that they had a quarterback in Sooner country.
Absolutely. It was a heck of a run there. Some big numbers. And, you know, did you mention Bradford? Was he on the list?
No, I didn't even have Bradford. They were just going to five consecutive.
Yeah, but so even earlier than that, I think Bradford went number one overall.
Yeah, you know,
all within about a 10-year period. Amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And multiple coaches, too. So that's
for sure. Yeah.
It's a great, great deal by them. So, that's our draft stat for today. And that's our draft 16, slot number 16, you know, halfway there in this journey that we're taking. And really appreciate you coming on. And I'd love to talk to you again tomorrow about number 15s.
We'll see you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.